genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400. We're positive talk radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, you can call us at area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is out of the ordinary. All three of my guests are going to discuss topics that are out of the ordinary or non-conventional. My first guest is the humanist chaplain at Harvard University. Over 1 billion people around the world define themselves as agnostic, atheist, or non-religious, and that includes 15% of Americans. My guest represents their worldview. My second guest is a businessman and financial expert. He's here to warn us about the financial tsunami that personal and government debt is bringing our way. My third guest is a novelist who's getting ready for the Christmas season in an unusual way. He's written a novel about Santa Claus in the noir style, made famous right here in Los Angeles. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Greg Epstein holds a BA in religion and Chinese and an MA in Judaic studies from the University of Michigan. Go Wolverines. He also holds an MA in theological studies from Harvard Divinity School. In addition to serving as the humanist chaplain at Harvard University, he is a regular contributor to On Faith, which is an online forum on religion produced by Newsweek and The Washington Post, and his work has been featured on National Public Radio and in several national publications. Welcome to the show, Greg. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Bill. I'm doing well.
Great. It's wonderful to have you here, especially talking about this subject. Here in Ventura County, we don't talk a lot about humanism, or we don't talk about non-religions. So this is a great subject, and we're glad to have you as an expert here.
Great.
Humanism has a long and a rich tradition. So let's start by defining what is it, and how does humanism differ from atheism and agnosticism?
Sure. Humanism is basically, if I had to give a three-word definition, I would use the title of my book. That's why I wrote my book. It's about humanism, and you know, I would define it very quickly as good without God. It's a non-religious way of looking at the world and way of being in the world, but the emphasis of humanism is not just the without God. It's not just on what we don't believe and on being an atheist or an agnostic, although most humanists would also define themselves as either atheist or agnostic or non-religious or something like that. The emphasis of humanism is on the good. It's on, as a human being and as a non-religious human being, it's on living well, being a good person for our own sake, for the sake of the people that we love, for the sake of all human beings, and for the sake of the entire natural world that surrounds us, that sustains us, so not just for human beings' sake, but for the world's sake.
For the planet, in other words. All right.
For the planet and whatever else we might discover out there one day.
All right. Ooh, I like that. Keep the door open. I like that, Greg. All right, so it's doing good, and that's the emphasis, is good without God. So the question is, can there really be good without God? Don't you have to have a deity figure in order to define both good and evil? And
no, you don't.
How so?
And the book, you know, a lot of people ask me, so is this a book about whether you can be good without God? And it's not. Because in this day and age, if you're asking yourself, you know, oh, can we be good? You don't ask yourself, we don't ask one another, oh, you know, you're a Christian or you're a Jew or you're a Muslim, can you be a decent human being, and also be that religion. So, you know, we shouldn't be asking that question of the billion non-religious people in our world either. You know, that kind of view of can you be good without God is not just a question, it's a prejudice. And it might even be a form of discrimination. So we've got to get rid of that way of thinking. But the way to get rid of that is not to simply say, oh, well, you know, non-religious people or humanists are better than everybody else. No, you know, we're just people just like anyone else, and we're struggling just the same way anybody else is to live a good life, to be compassionate, etc. But the point is that, you know, you can be good with or without God, but we want to explore what it means to be good without God, and that's humanism.
All right, and I like that definition of it. But I want to come back to this good, because good then becomes relative to societies. And let me just take an extreme example. But if you're an Eskimo a couple of centuries ago, or at least even a couple decades ago, an old person got old, you put them on an iceberg, you shoved them out to sea, and that was the end of that, which in a way is a form of murder. And yet that was very acceptable, and that was considered good within the Inuit society.
Right.
So good becomes relative and becomes very fluid, because what might be good in China is not considered good here in the United States. How do you get around those regional differences and that fluidity of what's good and what's bad?
It's very true that human senses of what's moral and what's ethical have been evolving, and a lot of what we used to consider moral and ethical in a world in which, you know, most people used to be religious, it was pretty, you know, would be considered pretty scandalous today. I mean, yes, the thing about that you said about Eskimos may be true, but, you know, it's also true that if you go back a few hundred years and you ask, you know, most good, you know, what at the time would have been good Christians, you know, is it okay to be a slaveholder or to have slaves, that, you know, most Christians would have said, yes, it is. And that's changed now, and Christians have been among those who've said we need to change that view. And so, you know, what I would just say is that there's also a positive side to the fact that as a humanist, I believe that we have to reason out and use compassion and use our earthly wisdom and scientific means of learning to determine what is good and what is ethical. And the good side of that, the great thing about that, is that now if you have that way of looking at the world, then you can't simply have somebody come along and say something horrible and then say, yes, but my religion justifies it, so it should be okay. Like, you can't have a general, you know, come with an army, whether it's our army or any other country's army, and say, I'm going to march my army in the battle, I'm going to kill you, and I'm justified by my God, so I you can't question me, you can't critique me. No. You know, if there's a reason for a country like ours or any other country to go to war, then, you know, people ought to be able to give real human reasons for that. And if not, then we should dismiss the case for war, even if somebody says their God tells them to go. And so, you know, it's actually really, I think that it can bring peace for people to have a little bit more of a humanistic mindset and a little bit more of a focus on what is it going to do for human beings.
Oh, it sounds
ethical.
It sounds good. We're talking to Greg Epstein, everybody. His book, Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe. And you brought up the subject of war, which is an area that I was going to explore. But first, I want to set the stage that humanism is on the growth. Over the last 20 years, it has been growing, that people are defining themselves as non-religious people over, say, the last 20 years. And that's true across all states here in the United States. And yeah. Interestingly enough, it's growing fastest among young people. So here's my question. Young people are increasingly describing themselves as non-religious. Humanism, you know, you're saying be good, and you're prescribing that. That's great. Fundamentally, to be good is do not kill. And yet young people are fighting the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So yeah. It's safe to assume that some percentage of those young soldiers are themselves humanists.
Yes.
How does a humanist deal with killing in the Iran or Iraq conflict?
Well, as I said, you know, there are some humanists who are pacifists, just like there are some pacifists from every other tradition. But I would say that, you know, most humanists, most non-religious people would want to look at it like this. They would say, you know, if we go to war, if I get involved in a conflict, let's say between U.S. and Afghanistan or whatever, is it going to increase human well-being overall? And is it going to increase human justice, or is it going to cause more suffering? And I think that you know, when it comes down to something where people need to stand up for a cause in order to create a more fair and just world for all human beings and to create a world in which people do better and are happier and live more healthfully, then, you know, we should be willing to go out and stand up for our rights and our principles, even up to including fighting for them. But, you know, you don't just go into a battle or into any other situation in life because a book, you know, an old book tells you to, or a religious authority tells you. It's got to have human reason and human compassion on its side.
All right. I like that. I'm not going to pursue that down another path. I want to go back to the fundamental belief behind all religion, and that is the prime mover theory there. I mean, humanism comes along and you're saying, all right, adapt and, you know, use moral and ethical evolution to sort of refine what humanism is. And I think that that's great. But when you trace everything back, religion really boils down to creationism versus evolution. And what was the spark that started the entire universe? So as a representative of all humanisms, humanists, tell us, you know, how did the world begin? How did it? If there's no God, what caused the first movement?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm not an astrophysicist, and I'm also not, you know, in a formal way, a representative of all humanists or all non-religious people, because humanists and non-religious people, the first thing that we tend to believe is that no one person could possibly be a representative of all of these. You know, I study this group of people, and I work with them on a day-to-day basis, but it doesn't put me above them or make me the world's expert on
or
them.
The spokesperson. All right, I buy that.
Or the Pope. You know, there are no popes. For humanists. There are no bishops and cardinals and all of that. What I would say is that, you know, first of all, the Stephen Hawking, who is an expert on, you know, the idea of the Big Bang and the cosmological theories that come from there, recently wrote a book that said you don't need a theory of a God creating the Big Bang in order to explain how the Big Bang works in terms of physics. The science works perfectly well that this thing happened spontaneously and that what has occurred in our universe over the last 14 billion years just sort of occurred naturally after that Big Bang. And we don't know what came before it. But we can understand what's happened since then. And really, more importantly than that, it's like we can't prove exactly in a mathematical way that there was no God interacting with the universe, along those 14 billion years, because you can't prove a negative. You know, there are all these theories, you know, you can't prove that there's not a flying spaghetti monster, you know, running the world. You can't prove that there's not a little green man sitting on top of my bald head right now, you know. but the point is, what do we see? What does the evidence show us? And the evidence is that if there's a concept of justice in the world, it's very imperfect, and we human beings put it there. We can't rely on the universe to make justice or to make moral and ethical laws, because so far, the universe has been a very imperfect place morally and ethically. You know, if there was a God, he doesn't seem to be managing morality very well here on Earth. And so I would say it would be our responsibility to manage that stuff ourselves.
Take
care of one another.
Very interesting. We're talking to Greg Epstein, everybody. His book, Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe. And Greg, in your book, you say, you write, actually, do you believe in God is actually a meaningless question. What do you mean by that?
Well, because if you ask people in America, let's say, do you believe in God? Well, maybe 90 to 95% of people will say, yes, I do. But then if you ask them, well, what do you mean by God? You might get 250 million different answers. And, you know, some people mean the supernatural God in the sky who gives commandments and cares very deeply what you do in your bedroom tonight. And other people simply mean, oh, well, God is love, or God is the universe, or God is nature. And you know, those people I have no real huge disagreement with, except to say, well, why do you need to call nature God? Why do you need to call love God? I mean, I believe in nature. I believe in love. I believe that there's a universe, but I don't need to worship those things or call them God in order to appreciate them.
All right. That's very good. Now, Rick, in just the few short seconds that we've got left, Greg, you say that humanism is growing in popularity. Why hasn't it caught on even more than it has already? What's holding it back?
You know, there are reasons why people will always have a diversity of beliefs. You know, some percentage of people will always believe in gods, and it's compelling because, you know, look, we learn as babies. If my parent walks out of the room, they still exist. They're not here in the room with me, but they still exist. And so our brains are structured such that, you know, when people are no longer living, sometimes we can still very much feel that they're present with us. And therefore, you know, it's possible to imagine a god, a deity that feels very real to us, but may, in fact, not actually be. And so, you know, that's one reason for belief. The other reason is really that religion is more than just belief in a god for most people. Religion is about community. It's about culture. It's about music. It's about art. It's about memories and history and family and values and all those things. And most people don't want to leave religion, even if they don't believe in a god, because they want those things. So what humanism is about, and what I've been writing about in my book, you know, mainly, is it's not about defeating religion or arguing against religion. It's about creating all those good things in a non-religious context without a vision of a god. It's creating community for people. It's creating compassion among people. It's creating a sense of history and memory and families and a way to celebrate life from a non-religious point of view.
I think that's great. We've been talking to Greg Epstein, everybody, the author of the book, Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe. If you are interested in this subject, I would suggest going out and picking up this book. Greg, thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
My pleasure.
Pleasure's ours, believe me.